Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Today is Tuesday, September 9th, 2014, and I've been broadcasting my show since August 2008, so it's been 6 years and 1 month. There are a lot of episodes in the archives, and last month I rebroadcasted my first 2 shows that I've ever recorded, and today I'm bringing you a brand new episode called The Will to Live After Psychological Abuse. One thing that most people I work with have in common is suicidal thoughts or feelings. I've never really addressed this one thing on Pandora's Box and decided it was time to really dig in and get to the root of why we lose our will to live. Most of the people I work with are coming out of relationships that were abusive, not in a physical sense necessarily, although physical abuse may be present in some cases. I work with people who are coming out of extreme forms of psychological abuse found in relationships with narcissists and sociopaths. Narcissists and sociopaths are crazy-making personalities. And when involved with a crazy maker, you end up feeling as if you're going crazy. When you're going crazy, you lose your grip on reality. You don't know what is truth or what is a lie. You don't know what is real and what is illusion. Not only are people who emerge from crazy-making relationships feeling crazy, but there's a huge amount of emotional and psychological pain. It's a kind of pain that is difficult to deal with and work through because it's weaved with so much confusion. During relationships with crazy makers, we often slowly let go of our support system, whether it be friends or family. We often even let go of our work, our livelihoods, either due to extreme stress and inability to cope, or because the crazy maker manipulates you into letting go of your job in order to have more control of your life, both financially and psychologically. This is very typical. It's called financial abuse. A lot of younger women of childbearing age actually let go of their careers or choose not to have careers in order to stay home and take care of the children. So they end up being financially dependent on the crazy maker. You may find yourself spending less and less time with friends and family because the crazy maker in your life is very critical of them and you're trying to keep the peace. Most of us, when involved with a crazy maker, and most of the time when you are, you may find that you're spending less and less time with yourself and losing touch with that vital connection to who you are and what is important to you as a person. So in a sense, you begin to lose yourself. Those of us who get into relationships like this often come from unstable family relationships where there is little or no emotional support. And so we walk through life feeling lonely and isolated, and when we finally find someone special in our life, we believe we found someone to fill that deep void of emptiness and loneliness, only to find ourselves plummeting deeper into despair when the truth reaches out and slaps us in the face. I often talk about being absorbed into the narcissistic reality. We unconsciously are absorbed into a crazy-making, psychologically diminishing and distorted reality and lose touch with the true reality. So why do so many victims of psychological their will to live? Because in most cases, the life you once knew is gone. You no longer know who you are. Your identity has been caught up in the identity of the crazy maker. And in the end, you often experience complete devaluation, erosion of self-worth, and the pain of being discarded and or replaced in the drop of a hat. While you're reeling in so much pain, shame, and loss of self, you may also find that you're completely alone and nobody out there has a clue what you're going through. You may feel isolated, confused, lost, deeply alone, and in the greatest pain of your life. Some may ask, what is there to live for? You may be left with a feeling that you no longer wish to live in a world with so much evil and pain, or with so much lack of love. Let's face it, crazy makers can be really evil creatures. And when I say evil, I mean they lack compassion, empathy, and caring for others, and so anything goes. They can do whatever they please without concern for how their actions and behavior affect others. Cruelty someone like this is capable of is unbelievable. We literally have trouble believing that what has happened has happened. We have trouble believing our elusive beloved, the person we've built our lives around, really was capable of such cruelty. If we believed he or she was capable of such cruelty, we would never have stayed in the relationship, right? Usually the cruelty takes us by surprise. We're flattened by it. We are shocked. We find ourselves in a state of shock and disbelief. One reason people feel suicidal is the desperate need to be released from the intensity of the pain and confusion. Most people who succeed at taking their own lives do so because the pain of being alive was simply too great, and there was nobody in their lives they felt they could turn to who would help them to work through or get out of pain. Without a deep spiritual understanding that moving through pain can make us stronger, can give us greater self-awareness, and help us to move up the ladder of consciousness to a higher level, we have very little reason to keep going. Why? This is the question many people will ask. Why should I carry on? Why should I keep enduring this pain? Why should I continue to wake up every morning with this intensity of pain, anguish, and anxiety? Why should I carry on with this obsession, confusion, and chaos? If the answer to the question why cannot be answered, the will to carry on is greatly compromised. When we're feeling suicidal and lack the will to carry on, we must gain awareness as to what our condition really means. What is this condition of lack of will to live leading us to? What is the purpose? Why? The spiritual answer to the question, why, is that a symbolic death needs to happen in order for a rebirth to occur. The draw towards death is appropriate and timely, but it is not a physical death we are truly seeking. It is a spiritual death and rebirth. We come to this place in our lives where the life we have been living has outgrown its form. We cannot carry on in the same way we have been. A symbolic death must occur. What is a symbolic death? It's when we surrender to the process of loss and grief and allow everything in our lives to fall away. What we've identified with, who we've identified with, our roles, our occupations, our social connections, our beliefs, our current reality must all fall away. When we're standing at the brink of death, so to speak, We have a great inner awareness that we can no longer go on living the way that we have been. Physical death is not the solution, although it does have its appeal. We believe that by leaving the body, we also leave our current emotional state. But some schools of thought will tell us that we take our current emotional state with us, that all we do when we die physically is shed the body. We shed our physical reality, but our emotional and spiritual reality continue on. If this is true, then suicide will not bring the much desired relief. It will bring instead a feeling of failure to complete our mission here on planet Earth. If we can adopt an understanding that our life is a mission and we have a purpose for being here, we can begin to see our current life circumstances as an initiation, an opportunity to rise above the level of consciousness in which we've been living our lives. The mythological goddess often depicts this passageway we must go through for our deepest transformation. If you study the goddess Inanna or Persephone, Kali, you will find the mythological story of transformation through symbolic death, destruction, and rebirth. The goddess Inanna is the queen of heaven who comes down to earth out of her desire to understand the human condition. But as she lives upon the earth, has earthly experiences, she realizes that she cannot truly understand the human condition until she takes the journey into Hades. And so she begins her descent into the underworld. In doing so, she must pass through seven gates. Each gate has a gatekeeper that asks that Inanna give up something of value before she gains entrance through that gate. So she leaves behind her crown, her jewels, her garments, her shoes, and arrives completely naked at the gates of Hades. The seven gates represent the things of this world we must give up and the passages we must go through. Inanna's nakedness represents her complete vulnerability. The garments represent her attachments in earthly life. She has to release her attachments in order to arrive at the gates of Hades, which is really a descension into one's deep subconscious. When Inanna arrived, she met Ereshkigal, her sister, who is the queen of Hades, otherwise known as the queen of darkness. Ereshkigal was Inanna's shadow, that which she was unaware of. In the mythological story, Ereshkigal kills her sister Inanna as she arrives into Hades and hangs her corpse on a hook to rot. It's a pretty gruesome image. But the symbolic meaning of this is that Inanna was consumed by her shadow, overtaken by it, and she was forced to release her one remaining attachment, her attachment to physical form. Inanna could not be prepared for the sheer power of the darkness. Her soul sought out that darkness in order to gain greater understanding and awareness, but when she entered the realm of darkness, she was consumed by it. Inanna had helpers in the earthly realm who were instructed to come after her if she did not emerge within 3 days and 3 nights. So here we have another resurrection story. The same kind of story as Jesus having been crucified by the dark forces of humanity and is dead 3 days before the resurrection. Inanna's helpers find her body and plead with Ereshkigal to release her body to them. Ereshkigal, in a moment of compassion, releases Inanna, and the helpers bring her back to the earthly realm where she is then reborn. Inanna is reborn into the earthly realm, having integrated her shadow. She met her shadow, Ereshkigal, was consumed by it, symbolically killed, and then integrated with it and released. Once released from darkness, having fully integrated our shadow, we are reborn with greater awareness. We now have awareness of our own dark side and the power it holds over us until such a time we are able to become aware of it and integrate it. When we're reborn, we are whole, having merged both darkness and light. We are no longer naive to the darkness within us that is attracted to the darkness within others. Until we understand our own shadow, we're attracted to those who will mirror our shadow to us. We are attracted to the shadow in others, to the dark forces that would threaten to consume us. It is our soul that pulls us towards that darkness. Just as Inanna's desire to know the human condition on a greater level pulled her towards Hades and the meaning of her shadow. Our soul pulls us towards this fate not to destroy us, but to bring us to a greater awareness of self. It is when we dance with our own shadow, we become whole. We're no longer pretending that we are only the light, only the good. When we're in Hades, we meet the demon, and it is a part of us. We see our own hatred, our fear, our anger, our jealousy, and all of our weaknesses. We see that these weaknesses are part of the human condition, and we learn to have compassion for those parts of ourselves we've previously disowned. When we have compassion for our own inner darkness, we can have greater compassion for the darkness in others, and for the darkness of humanity as a whole. This doesn't mean we have to like it. It doesn't mean we have to allow people who are evil or otherwise unaware into our lives. On the contrary, the more we are aware of our own darkness, the more we are aware of the darkness in others, and the more we can stay away from it. In order to have the will to live, in times of great darkness, we must develop an understanding that we are on a very deep and profound journey that is guiding us inward towards a much greater understanding of self. It often takes the catalyst, the narcissist or sociopath or other crazy maker to slay our illusions. When our illusions are slain, we're brought in touch with the truth. Even if the truth is hard to swallow, it may take time to integrate that truth. The truth has the power to set us free, yes, but it's often going to hurt a great deal before the process of accepting the deeper truth. The goddess Kali is known as the destroyer of illusion and also the goddess of transformation and rebirth. She's depicted as an evil creature who consumes her own children. She is shown in mythology as a demon and is a very ugly picture. However, the goddess Kali carries a pretty great symbology. What she is really consuming is her own creation in order to give birth to a new creation. So her children are symbolic of her creations, that which she brings forth. She destroys the illusions in order to give birth to the truth. Our illusions are what we believe to be true. When they come crumbling down, we know we're experiencing the wrath of Kali. She destroys our illusions so we may finally see the truth. But we feel safe in our illusions. Our beliefs are wrapped up in our illusions. We believe that we are one thing and find that we are quite another. We believe those closest to us are one thing and we find they are quite another. Letting go of our illusions is a deep and painful process. Our illusions are the false ground we have built our house on. We have built our house on sand, and when the rains come, it washes away. Our foundation was never solid. We simply were unaware. And as we journey into the darkness, we gain insight and awareness, especially if we go into the darkness with our eyes wide open. Hopefully, this insight and awareness can be used to build our new house on rock, something truly solid, with a solid sense of self. If you think about it, people are on the brink of symbolic death or the verge of suicide. Their illusions have washed away, and they have nothing solid under their feet. They are floundering. They are lost. They don't know where to go. They've just met with the sword of Kali. Although Kali is known as a dark goddess, she's not evil. She is the dark goddess of transformation and rebirth. She knows the illusions you've built your life on must be destroyed in order for you to find the truth of who you are. It is similar to the myth of the phoenix, the bird who must first be consumed in the ashes of its own demise before it can be reborn and take flight once again. So you've heard the story of the phoenix rising. It's rising out of its own ashes. Another of the dark goddesses is Persephone. Persephone is the daughter of Demeter, who was the goddess of earth and grain. Ironically, Persephone was abducted while reaching down to pick a flower known as a narcissus from the earth, which caused her to be swallowed up by the earth and taken as the bride of Hades, who is the brother of Zeus. In her grief, Demeter withdrew her life force from the earth, causing winter to fall upon the earth. Nothing would flourish or grow. When Demeter learned about her beloved daughter's marriage to Hades, she bargained for her release, but only a partial release was agreed upon. Persephone would be released to the earthly realm 6 months of the year and would have to return to Hades 6 months of the year. During the 6 months Demeter had her daughter with her, the earth flourished with life as we enter the time known as spring and summer. But as Persephone returns to the dark realm to be the bride of Hades, Demeter goes into grieving and withdraws her life force, which is the seasons of fall and winter. The true message of this myth is there is a season for joy and celebration, and there is a season for grief and going within. These are natural seasons of the human condition. Although some would have us believe that life is to be a continual celebration, it's unrealistic to believe this because there are circumstances in life that cause us to withdraw our life force from the outside and go deep within. There is a time for grieving, for letting go. There's a time for awakening to our true self. In the myth of Persephone, there were dark forces who abducted Persephone and fed upon her life force, which thereby affected her mother. Persephone had to accept her fate that she would live part of her life in darkness. When we enter the dark realms, we enter a period of grieving, of letting go. Part of that letting go often involves letting go of the illusions we've built our life under. Let's take a look at the illusions we're living under when we build our lives around a crazy maker. Out of our own unconsciousness, we accept the insanity of the crazy maker as truth in some way. Like the goddess Persephone, we are pulled into Hades and held hostage. We come to believe that the god Hades has our best interest at heart. He cares about us. He cares about our well-being. He would never do anything to hurt us. And this is the illusion. The truth we are unwilling to see is the god Hades cares only for his own appetite. He wants what he wants, when he wants it, without concern for anyone who is affected by his appetite. Because of our own unwillingness to fathom the idea that someone is using us to feed his own appetite, we create an elaborate story. It is usually a love story. We want, need, and desire to believe we are loved and cared for by the god Hades. The truth is, the god Hades will devour us, use us up, and cast our remains aside while he goes in search of the next meal. This is similar to the dark goddess Ereshkigal killing her sister Inanna and hanging her corpse on a hook, disposing of her, consuming her, and disposing of her. This doesn't fit with our love story. We need to believe we are loved, we are special, the relationships in our lives have meaning. So along comes the goddess Kali, who slays the illusions we've built our life on, which includes slaying our love story to pieces. We might get angry at this force of Kali for showing us the truth. But the true villain is the god Hades. Hades is our abductor. He is the one who devours us and spits us out. He is the one who pulls us into darkness. We find in order to heal and to be reborn into the earthly realms, we must face the truth about who Hades really is, but we also must face the truth about who we really are. What part of our character needed to invent a love story in order to survive in the dark realms? This is what we often refer to as the Stockholm syndrome. We create a love story with the villain in order to survive the darkness. Because our love story leads us to believe we are safe, cared for by the one who is taking us hostage. We need to believe that one that is taking us hostage would never hurt us, and it's a survival mechanism. When the illusion is blown to pieces and we are hurt by the truth, our love story has so many holes in it, we cannot keep it afloat any longer, although we may try. We may develop elaborate rescue fantasies that the god Hades will come to our rescue and show us that we really do have value to him. Our belief that the god Hades abducted us because he loved us keeps us in denial about what is really going on. Coming out of denial is a painful process. To discover that we were never really loved or cared for by our abductor, but rather we were used to feed his incessant appetite, is a hard truth to swallow. We would often rather die than face the truth. The truth can be that painful. Using phrases such as the abductor, the god Hades, and the crazy maker can seem a bit extreme to many, but it's quite accurate in an archetypal view. In the spiritual journey, we embody certain archetypes, and we involve ourselves with different archetypes. We might embody the maiden in distress archetype and be looking for a rescuer, a hero. In seeing our distress, we can easily fall prey to the villain masquerading as the hero. What comes of this dynamic is we become leery of the external hero and learn to nurture our own internal hero, which is what Joseph Campbell refers to as the hero's journey. In the hero's journey, we take the journey into the underworld, where we meet with our shadow or our underworld demons and conquer those demons so that we can emerge back into the earthly realms with a wholeness we never had prior to this journey. What truly makes us our own hero is that we don't give up. We can stare death in the face, but we don't let it take us. We may go through a symbolic death, but we don't take our own life. We learn to accept the journey we are on as a crucial part of our psychic and emotional development. Why is it, do you think, that most great stories have a villain? It's because through adversity, through pain, and through betrayal brought upon us by the villain, we find our greatest strength. We often find a strength we never realized we had. We find parts of ourselves we never knew were missing. We see our own ability to face death, to stare down the demon, and accept the greater truth. Although most people I work with come to me with suicidal tendencies, I hear a similar story, and it goes like this. Although I think about taking my own life, I'd never actually do it. I wouldn't care, however, if I was accidentally hit by a bus. This statement tells us that although our will to live is weak, and we would not consciously pull the trigger. Only those who cannot see something beyond their own pain would pull the trigger. It is in our understanding that as painful as this is, there's a reason for our pain, a purpose for our suffering that keeps us going. It is in our greatest darkness that our internal flame is often the weakest. Our inner light is very dim. Our lack of will and desire to carry on comes from a lack of light in our lives, a lack of our own essence. I wrote my first CD titled From the Shadows during a time I was guided to study the dark goddess of transformation and rebirth. And what I found is it was my greatest darkness where I discovered that I am the light. What greater power can we have than to know we are the light in our own lives? And in being the light in our own lives, we become the light of the world. The light we seek is within us. It's to be found in our greatest darkness. It's sometimes because it's in our greatest darkness that we stop long enough, we slow down enough to go within and to really meet those parts of ourselves cut off from. In a world of duality, we discover there is contrast. There are opposites. There's light and dark, good and evil, love and fear. We must experience one to know the other. How would we truly know love if we didn't know fear? How would we know light if we didn't know darkness? Our soul pulls us to the light, but we must often travel through the darkness to get there. Otherwise, how would we ever recognize it? Some people come into this world to play the part of the villain. Others in their own unconsciousness play the villain during certain parts of their journey. And we've all likely played the part of the villain at one time or another. But if we have awareness, we can learn from the pain we have caused others, make amends for who we have hurt, and rise to a new level of being. What we must all realize is that some people are stuck in villain and will never learn from their experiences. These are people who have no attachments to who they hurt. They are seriously lacking in compassion and empathy and only think of their own appetites. These are people we must learn to recognize and stay clear of. It's not our job to save the lost souls of this planet. It's our job to save ourselves. And through the act of our own salvation, our light automatically guides others who seek the light. Those who are not seeking the light will never truly find it. In fact, the true villains of the planet despise the light. They avoid it because light means exposure. If one is only concerned with his own appetite, but uses the appearance of concern for others in order to bait his prey, If he should be exposed, he would lose his food source. So the greatest fear of the villain is to be exposed. And it is the light that exposes the darkness. The more we ourselves step into the light, the more we shine our light upon those who fear exposure. These people, by their very nature, will leave our presence because they fear exposure. And this is why when you become more enlightened, those who have dark hearts will often leave your life. They cannot tolerate that kind of exposure. So they will seek out one where they can hide their true nature with. Sometimes when someone leaves our life, we may react in fear, experience rejection and abandonment. But we don't see the sword of Kali working in our defense. We don't see that this is truly a blessing in disguise. The illusions are being exposed so that the truth may be brought to light. We've only lost a vampiric entity that has preyed upon us as a food source. We've only lost someone who is consumed with his own need without concern for others. Losing someone like this in our lives is not a true loss, it's actually a gain. But we've told ourselves a love story in order to remain in the illusion, and that love story has just been shattered. There's a sense of grief when your love story is shattered, even if that love story was fabricated. It makes perfect sense when we're on a journey to recover that we demonize or villainize the crazy maker in our lives. I don't care what kind of spiritual bypass is suggested by the many different schools of thought. It's actually a healthy part of the process of recovering our own soul to recognize who the vampires are and make every effort to stay away from them. Demonizing and villainizing helps us to stay away. More power to us, right? We have to be able to recognize the darkness and how we are affected by it. We have to be able to recognize when someone really doesn't have our best interest at heart. If we don't recognize it, we will continue to be seduced by it. I don't care what the spiritual guru says about loving your enemy. You cannot love your enemy until you first learn to love yourself. This means getting yourself out of harm's way. This means staying away from those who are feeding on your energy. We're not here to sacrifice ourselves to the demon. We're here to shine light on the darkness and thereby bring light to the world. We live in a world of duality. There's both good and evil. Maybe if we are truly spiritually advanced and have reached a whole different dimension of reality, we may live fully in the light and be unaware of anything other than the light. But most of us simply aren't there yet. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we are in order to go somewhere else. Anything else is considered a spiritual bypass. Sometimes we need to stand up to the darkness and call it what it is. Unconscious acts done in one's self-interest without any concern for how the whole is affected is evil. Good is concerned with its own development, but also the development of the whole, the development of humanity. Where evil is only concerned with its own advancement at the expense of others. For us to deny this is to deny reality. And when we deny reality, we live in an illusion that can be threatened at any time. If you find yourself without will to live, it's time to confront the demons, both within you and outside of you. Spiritual level, some will say that the only real demons are within you and all else is but a reflection. If this is true, then by going within and seeing how we have been treating ourselves, we may discover the root cause of why we have allowed others to mistreat us. As we extend greater love and compassion to ourselves, we increase our light, which increases our magnetism to lighter beings. There may be great truth to the idea that when you love yourself on greater and greater levels, the people in your life will either change or go away. They will either become harmonious with where you are, or they will leave your life so that they don't risk exposure. Now, I want to address this a little bit further. A lot of people come to me who've been married to narcissists or sociopaths, or who've been in relationships where they've had children with people like this, and are dealing with court battles, consistently being drug into court, consistently having this person have power over them. Just cannot seem to get rid of this person in their life, even though they've left. And because there are children or joint assets, they are tied to this person. So I have a lot of people come to me and say, how do I get rid of them? I mean, they look at this idea of if I raise my level of consciousness, that person might go away. But it can be really difficult to raise your level of consciousness when you are constantly being triggered. And so this is where people are running into problems that are in constant court battles with narcissists or sociopaths, is that they're constantly being triggered. They're angry. They're frustrated. They're afraid. They fear that person. And so that person's being constantly fed. That vampiric entity is constantly being fed your energy through the energy of fear, through the energy of feeling disempowered, through the energy of anger and hatred and all of those things. And it's not to say that you don't have a period of time in which you're going to be angry, that you're going to feel hatred and things like that. That can be completely normal. But at some point, you have to really go within and look at your own triggers. You have to look at, what is this guy triggering in me, or what is this woman triggering in me? And really bring it up to be dealt with, reacting to that person. You are withdrawing the food source from him. If you continue to be angry, frustrated, afraid, disempowered, you are continuing to feed the beast. So the more you are able to deal with your own feelings of anger, frustration, fear, the more that you can neutralize these feelings and not react. It takes a very big person to do this. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying this is the only way one can increase their level of consciousness to the point where the other person will realize it's just not worth it anymore and go find another game. Learning to have love and compassion for yourself is always the answer. There's no greater path. It's said we cannot truly love another until we have loved ourselves. And I believe this is true. We must see the lack of love in our lives, and as a result of our lack of love and compassion for ourselves. So let's write a new love story. Let's write a love story of the self on its quest to truly know and love the self, the hero's journey. As you embrace yourself, you will regain the will to live. You will regain a sense of purpose in your life. And most of you will increase your magnetism for those who are truly capable of loving you. And if you need some assistance, if you need support, if you need help to work through these issues, to face that shadow within yourself, to increase your own level of awareness and consciousness, this is the work that I do. And you can find out more about me and my work through my website, narcissismfree.com, narcissismfree.com. I have all kinds of tools and techniques through hypnosis, including psychic cord cutting, soul retrieval, and a lot of different kinds of explorations through hypnosis, as well as doing process therapy through counseling. So once again, you can find out more about me at narcissismfree.com. My name is Kalia, and I want to thank you for listening today. I'm going to leave you with one of my songs from my second CD, The Road Home, called Dancing with the Shadows. Very appropriate. Have a good day.